Welcome to the Divorce Coaches Academy podcast with co-founders and hosts, Tracy Callahan and Deborah Doak. Each week, we tackle another tough topic to help professional divorce coaches maximize client impact and cultivate thriving practices. We also want to spread the word about the expertise and value that certified divorce coaches bring to the table. At DCA, we are committed to ongoing learning and we value generosity among divorce coaching professionals. We believe that when one succeeds, we all succeed. Welcome to Divorce Coaches Academy. I'm Tracy and I'm here with Deborah.
Hello, I'm happy to be with you.
So happy to be rejoining again and talking about one of our favorite topics, how to choose a mediator and spot a bad one. Yep, I'm sorry, it happens. Okay. We believe that mediation can be a lower cost, less conflicted approach to divorce, that families can save money and get to an agreement faster and easier by using a mediator instead of battling it out in court. But is that always true? Many couples are choosing mediation as an alternative to litigation and to make divorce and co-parenting agreements. And most states now require the parties to participate in some degree of mediation before the court will even decide on a case, listen to a motion, or schedule a trial. And while this is amazing news for families, that alternative dispute resolution processes like mediation are becoming more and more mainstream, we still see clients struggle to resolve their differences and end up in litigation. Just happens, right? And in past episodes, we've talked about strategies you can use with clients to improve their chances of success in mediation. But today, we want to really, really dig into the importance of choosing the right mediator and what to do if your mediator or your client's mediator seems to be the one who is complicating the process. So there are two things that set clients up for success in divorce mediation. One, understanding what the process is and what it isn't. And two, having skills to de-escalate conflict and negotiate well. I often hear stories of people getting frustrated and failing at mediation because they are missing one or both of these really important elements. So let's start by reviewing the role of a mediator. The number one thing your clients need to understand about divorce mediation is that the mediator is neutral. Neutral.
Yes, neutral. So many people really don't understand that, and we can tell by the concerns and fears they bring to us. And mediators don't take sides. They also are not there to ensure a fair agreement, and I used air quotes there. They really don't insert their own opinions, and they don't give legal advice. A mediator is not a judge. They are not an arbitrator. You're not making your case to them. They're just there to serve as a neutral party to help people facilitate a conversation, resolve differences, and get to some sort of agreement. That's why it's called alternative dispute resolution, because it's an alternative to the litigation process where each side is presenting their case and then someone else, like a judge or a magistrate or an arbitrator, a private judge, makes a decision on the outcome.
Yeah.
So to give some background, I want to read a few excerpts from the Supreme Court of Ohio's core values for mediation. And I'm sharing these because I think they do a great job of explaining some of the important standards of practice that mediators abide by. Now, in the show notes, I'm also going to link to the Academy of Professional Family Mediators Standards of Practice for Professional Family Mediators. So if you want to check that, that is really robust information. Okay.
Great resource.
Yeah. So, but from the Ohio Supreme Court, just because this is brief and understandable, I want to read this. Number one, neutrality. The mediator does not seek any particular resolution of the dispute. The mediator usually does not give advice, and the mediator does not make decisions. Neutrality is an important way for the mediator to support party self-determination. By focusing on a constructive decision-making process rather than a particular outcome.
Mm.
Number two. Yeah. Right? Impartiality. The mediator conducts the mediation in a way that is not partial, biased, or prejudiced. The mediator conducts the mediation in an even-handed manner. Impartial conduct removes any impression of favoritism and promotes respect of each party's exercise of self-determination. Impartiality requires the mediator to avoid having his or her own beliefs, preferences, or other personal perspectives substitute for those of the parties. It doesn't matter what the mediator thinks.
Or their beliefs.
Right.
Or their preferences.
Right.
Or their personal perspectives.
Yes. Number three, fairness of process. Fairness in mediation means that the parties experience the process as being fair to each of them. It's important each party feel respected, heard, and included. Sometimes mediators confuse their responsibilities to offer a fair process with a duty to ensure a fair outcome for the parties.
Yeah,
that's written by the Ohio Supreme Court, that sometimes mediators confuse their responsibilities. They're not responsible for a fair outcome. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to mediators, you should be aware that there are different types of mediators. And they should all uphold this same standard of practice, but their approach may be slightly different. And we see this show up specifically in the difference between what we would call an evaluative mediator and a facilitative mediator. Facilitative mediators act primarily as this neutral who helps parties identify their interests, communicate effectively, and generate, our favorite, mutually acceptable solutions.
Yes.
Right? A facilitative mediator typically does not offer any opinions or any solutions. A facilitative mediator is going to just encourage the parties to find their own solutions. Now, in contrast, there are evaluative mediators. They take on a more active role in helping evaluate the strengths and weaknesses of each party's position. They may offer opinions, legal analysis, or predictions about likely outcomes if it were to go to court. And the focus with an evaluative mediator is often on reaching a settlement that aligns with legal standards or norms. So it's important for you to understand the difference. Now, many mediators have all the tools in their toolbox, but if they primarily focus on one or the other, that's important to know.
Yeah. And there is a big difference.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not saying one is better than the other, right? It's really dependent on what the case needs and what the party's interests are. Okay. Yeah. So once your client is clear on what a mediator does, really important, the next step is to prepare them to interview potential mediators to find the right person for their situation. Yes. We said interview. In our pre-mediation divorce coach specialty training, we spend quite a bit of time talking about working with clients to compile a list of interview questions. In taking the time to speak personally with any potential professional is important, but making sure that a potential mediator's style, background, and approach align with our client's desires is critical.
Mm-hmm.
It's critical. Okay. Again, as coaches, we're supporting that thinking process, identifying what is important. What do they need? So, some questions, right? Preparing our clients and compiling these questions is key. So, question one, what are the mediator's professional qualifications? Yeah. The mediator will be advising you on how to handle sensitive and personal matters. So you want to find someone who is well qualified. Things you can ask are, what is their education? What are their certifications, areas of expertise, training, How long have they been mediating cases like yours? How many cases do they mediate on a monthly basis? Second question, how does the mediator approach new cases or disputes? What happens throughout the process? This question is open-ended and is ideal because you want the mediator's thoughts as well as concrete information. Did he or she explain the procedure clearly? Do you understand what will happen and when? Do you understand your role and that of the mediator? Does the mediator meet with each party prior to face-to-face mediation sessions? How much detail does he or she want to know in advance of the mediation? Okay, here they're really getting, your client should be understanding how this mediator works.
Right. Yeah. So next, we might want to inquire as to which style of mediation they use and whether they meet in joint session or use shuttle mediation. Now, we talked about styles of mediation earlier, but shuttle mediation is where the individual parties are in separate rooms, whether that's virtually on Zoom or in person, they could be in physically separate rooms, and the mediator is going to go back and forth and meet individually with the parties separately. We're kind of seeing that for many mediators, shuttle mediation is becoming the norm, but there are some real limitations in the shuttle mediation process, one of which is that our clients lose the ability to utilize the communication techniques and the negotiation strategies in that environment. They don't get to interact with their partner. So a lot of the strategies we're working on, they don't get to use. So this is something I would really encourage you to think through with your client and talk through the pros and cons of joint session versus shuttle and what aligning it with their goals rather than, again, defaulting to what the mediator said. So again, when it comes to style, the style of mediation should fit the needs of the parties of your client, not the preference of the mediator or any attorneys that might be present in the sessions. Your client is in charge of this process. This is a professional they're hiring.
Okay. Yeah, really important.
So important to advocate for what they need.
Absolutely. Not the preference of the mediator or the attorneys present.
Right. This is, these decisions are things our clients have to live with for years and decades to come. So they're in charge. Another question you might explore is how would the mediator describe their goals for the mediation process? And we might hear all kinds of answers. Some examples might include, they might say their goal is reaching agreement. It might be compromise. It might be just satisfaction with the fairness of the process and results, meeting each participant's needs, or just empowering them, just exploring the issues, getting things out on the table to be discussed. So listen for what their goal is. It'll give you a lot of insight into what you're stepping into.
Absolutely.
And then how many sessions do they normally use to conduct a full mediation? How long are the meetings? So one thing we know is that some mediators prefer to schedule one long day and try to get everything resolved in, I call it a police interrogation. And others tend to schedule shorter sessions and meet on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Again, working with our clients to figure out which of these works best for them, what are they looking for, and the style and the pacing should meet their needs, not the mediator's preference.
Yeah. Again, not the mediator's convenience or their attorney's presence convenience. Okay.
Yeah.
Another great question is, will the mediator leverage their experience to offer opinions that will help resolve the problem? Here, the answer you should hear is no.
No.
I won't give my opinion unless I'm specifically asked for it. A mediator's job is to remain neutral. Rather than stating his opinion, her or his opinion, they're supposed to help listen effectively to each other. Right? It is not the mediator's place to solve the problem. Rather, they should help brainstorm creative ways that the clients could achieve resolutions on their own. If asked, however, your mediator can offer an opinion, but this should be done somewhat reluctantly and generally only near the end of a mediation or to break an impasse, right? And this is often what we talk about in terms of helping the clients explore their badness, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Another thing. Do you primarily work with parties on a pro se basis or with attorneys present in the mediation process? There are a lot of mediators who specifically practice in pro se, and there's a lot of mediators who specifically work with attorneys, right? Another question, how would I go about including my attorney, coach, or other support person if needed in the mediation process? Recall that the basis of mediation is self-determination and a fair process. You should hear something that supports your ability to be a confident, informed participant, but also reassures you that the presence of someone other than the participants requires the agreement of all of the participants in the mediation process. Okay. So important to explore those questions up hand. And how much does your service cost? Yeah, cost. Okay. What is included and not included in your services? Some mediators include drafting of agreements as part of their hourly rate, or if there is a package, right? So are they charging extra for preparing a draft agreement or a memorandum of understanding? Right. And is it hourly? Is it for the time used, or is it a package up to a certain amount of hours? So really important to make an informed decision of looking at what that cost is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So when a couple decides to mediate, it's interesting because the first agreement that they have to make is on their choice of a mediator.
And usually that is not with the help of a mediator.
Right. So ideally, both your client and their partner would interview several mediators, either together or separately, and be able to make a mutual decision and then begin engaging with whatever mediator they've chosen. And then as they progress through the process, we continue to support our clients in proposal development, flexible thinking, empathetic problem solving, conflict de-escalation, and effective communication. Here's the thing about the chosen mediator. Mm-hmm. The right mediator can save the day, and the wrong mediator can wreak havoc. In some instances, a mediator might be appointed by the court, chosen by attorneys, or for some other reason, your client didn't have your guidance to help select the right mediator. The truth is, even if they ask all the right questions, there's no guarantee what that mediator is going to be like until they're in session. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what happens. If your client begins to feel like they aren't participating in a neutral, impartial, fair, and self-directed process, because just like we hear stories and complaints about attorneys, we hear them about mediators too. And honestly, some of what we hear is pretty shocking.
Yes. Well, especially as mediators ourselves. Right? Absolutely. My heart aches. Right?
I know. Yeah. And honestly, some of what we hear is pretty shocking. So we want you to be prepared to help your clients sort out things that feel unfair because they don't like their partner or they don't like the process, and sort that out from things that are blatantly problematic.
Yeah. So some flags here, right? If you're feeling that the mediator is acting like a lawyer, right? Yeah. One of the benefits of mediation is that it allows parties to color outside of the strict lines of the law and craft creative agreements that work for their family. Yes, outside of the law. Unfortunately, some mediators focus far too much on what the legal statutes say and far too little on understanding the goals and interests of the people trying to resolve their differences. Phrases like, well, that's just how we do it here, or that's what the statute says, limits the parties and should not be happening in mediation. Okay. So acting like a lawyer is one of those red flags. Two, permitting unproductive behavior. So a mediator's job is to provide a safe space for participants to express themselves as part of this dispute resolution process. Failing to take charge when one or both parties are blaming, interrupting, accusing, yelling, or name-calling is not part of that process. Parties are bound to have disagreements. as they work through the terms of their property settlement or parenting. But civil and respectful behavior should be the required standard in any mediation. A qualified mediator should be able to take charge, de-escalate, and redirect more productive avenues of conversation.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. It's not a knockdown fight, drag out fest.
No.
Right.
No.
Another red flag, number three, offering input too early or too often. Mediator's role is to facilitate conversation, not to ensure a quick or fair agreement. So let me share a story. I recently had a client where very early on, the mediator actually instructed her spouse that he could claim the down payment on their home as separate property and deduct it from the amount of equity to be divided. He hadn't asked about it. He may not have even been aware that that was his right. This ended up costing my client over $100,000, and she was livid, and rightfully so. It is not the mediator's job to protect anyone's legal rights. Parties are responsible for knowing their rights or consulting with their own legal professionals if they have questions. Mediators should be offering options, opinions, or guidance only when asked and only when the couple's been unsuccessful in their own attempt to resolve their differences. Jumping in and telling somebody that they are not claiming something that's rightfully theirs is absolutely bad behavior.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And here's another one. Number four, showing personal bias. As a neutral, and we talked about this earlier when I read from the Ohio Supreme Court, it's the mediator's job to create a warm environment where both parties feel validated and heard. While it might not feel great to your client to hear the mediator sound supportive of their partner's proposal or opinion, they should feel equally supportive. Mm-hmm. Things have gone off track if your client feels judged, pressured, or dismissed.
Yeah.
I once had a client who was working with me, so she was well prepared for mediation. She had gotten legal advice as to the range of spousal support she should expect. But because it was this really high net worth case, my client felt this continued pressure from the mediator to settle for less because she was going to be getting such large amounts of investment and in retirement accounts. He kept telling her how lucky she was compared to his other clients. Ugh. I'm just throwing the BS flag on that. That is none of his business.
None of his business, right?
None. Zero.
So what can a client do if they feel uncomfortable that a mediator is conducting themselves in a manner that violates the standards, okay? Standards of practice of neutrality, impartiality, or self-determination. Well, they do. They have some ability to do something here, okay? Yep. Number one, they can have a conversation or request a caucus with the mediator, okay? So if the parties are in joint session, right? A caucus is that then they do a breakout and the individual party meets with that mediator. And here they can have a conversation with the mediator as to what they are experiencing to identify some of these issues or concerns that they are having. This caucus, I want to stress, is confidential. So anything that the party shares with the mediator is supposed to be held in confidentiality and not shared with the other party unless that party agrees for that information to be shared. So utilizing the ability to caucus, to identify these issues for the mediator right away, okay, if they see them, right? Another option, they can change mediators. Yes, it is less costly to change a mediator than it is to change an attorney, as we often discuss, and may be crucial for this process to continue. They can also choose to terminate mediation. When we talk about self-determination, mediation is a voluntary, self-determined process. Mm-hmm. Okay. So at any point in time, a client can decide to either pause for the day, terminate the mediation at that time, make some decisions about what they're doing, whether they're going to continue in this process. Okay. It doesn't necessarily mean an impasse. It could just mean, okay, we're going to terminate today, try to get things back on track, or identify issues and concerns with mediator outside of the mediative practice, and or make a determination whether they are ending this process. Okay. And as Deborah shared at the beginning, the Ohio State Standards of Practice, many states have governance over the practice of alternative dispute resolution from the courts. Okay. Mediators have ethical responsibilities. So you can file a complaint if you believe neutrality or impartiality or standard of practice has been broken in that process with that mediator. Okay. So there's lots of action steps that clients can do to feel empowered in this process.
Absolutely. So you know how much we love mediation. And as we say, as we close every week, we could go on and on, but hopefully we've given you some good questions to ask when interviewing. We've given you some red flags to look for. You know, part of our work in preparing clients for an alternative dispute resolution process is supporting them in identifying the type of mediator they want to work with, gaining the tools and the skills to participate effectively in that process, and advocating for themselves when they feel like something's gone off track. Just like every other part of their divorce, we encourage clients to take charge of their own process. And that includes any professionals they hire to assist them. So thanks for joining us this week. We hope you found it helpful. And we hope you'll join us next week because we have a big announcement. So you do not want to miss next week. We promise you. See you then. Thanks for joining us for the Divorce Coaches Academy podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. It helps other divorce professionals find us and add to the conversation. And don't forget to follow us on social media to be the first to know when we add new classes and events. We'll be back next week with another topic to help you maximize client impact, create a thriving business, and promote the value of professional divorce coaching.